So welcome everybody. This is the Patterns and Practices Developer Community Call, February 2015 edition. And I can see a quite significant amount of people already joining, which is really good. And we can, based on the previous discussions and previous calls, we're seeing additional people joining up during the calls and dropping during the calls, and that's pretty normal. The call is being recorded, and we will be sharing the recordings using our video channel in the channel 9, which is aka.ms/officedevbnpvideos. We should actually update that one on the slide as well. But if you can actually, I'm going to actually paste in that URL to the link window just to make sure that everybody actually gets that one. So aka.ms/officedevbnpvideos. Double checking that it's actually working, and it is, and pasting that one in the time window. So if somebody wants to check the recording afterwards, you can use that address to get to our video channel in channel 9, and we are always adding all of the recordings and all of the monthly recordings here as well. There's some demos and there's some other stuff in that channel as well, and we keep on growing that channel as we go. So this is a one-hour session, and let's be, because there is already more than 40 people actually already joined, so let's be muted until we open up the discussion slightly later. Right now, I'm going to run through some slides, and then we're going to move into the demo section. And the slides is more about what did we have actually on the latest release, what is the incoming stuff, and we do actually this time around, we do have a commitment on the roadmap for the March release, which is a really good thing. Those who have joined us a few times beforehand have seen that we're always showing the same roadmap for the following months, which is not a good thing. So now we do have some commitments across the BNP core team as well. And hopefully my clicker is actually working. So just to make sure, that my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager from the Office 365 product group. I used to be a field person, but then moved to the Redmond organization last July and been running the developer patterns and practices from early dawns of this program before it was called something completely different, which we can't even actually share out loud in the community. But let's start with a few slides, and obviously today we're going to go through the monthly highlights, the contributions, and other topics. So what about the contributions? Who are the people who contributed on this month? Typical stuff, what we do in every single monthly call. Then some notes on the roadmap and next steps, but then what we want to do is demos, because people want to really see what we've added to the contributions. So there's the three demos coming up later today. During this call, we will target this as a 50-50. So I'll do my 50% or 30 minutes monologue, but feel free to have a discussion in IM window. I'm checking the IM window all the time. So if there's any specific questions, just let us know. And really good comment from Ken as well. So we keep on doing this. And from a timing perspective, we will keep every single second Tuesday of a month is actually the monthly community call. If you go to our GitHub repo, you can download a calendar entry, which you can add to your OneNote or Outlook or your calendar. So our calendar, our release schedule is that every single first Friday, we will do a monthly release or monthly merge, which is essentially means that we will do more significant testing for the stuff what we have in the dev branch, and that will be merged to the master branch. So if you want to have always the latest and greatest access on what we're actually doing, you can go always to the dev branch and you're able to see the latest development, what's coming up with the following monthly release. The monthly releases, however, we are running all of our unit tests and all of that against the patterns and practices core component as well. We don't do that too often. The reason why we do it only on a monthly basis is also the fact that actually running our unit tests is taking, what is it Bert can actually confirm, but I think it's 5 to 6 hours nowadays. So that BNP core component has a pretty significant amount of tests. Anyway, rambling on my brain, let's try this one again. So having you on the top right corner, there's a pen looking thingy, and from there you can select that stamp icon, and just to see how many can actually do this. If you're using a web client or a mobile client, you can't actually use this. And once again, I put myself in some Spiderberg not in Helsinki. Interesting. So I'm calling in from today from Finland. I tend to fly between the Seattle and Finland way too often, but that's just realities of my role. And we can see some people in the East Coast, which is as expected. Europe, not that many people usually from APAC at this time of the night, and also the PSD people don't usually join on this course immediately. And I do know that this every now and then this works, and every now and then this actually doesn't work. But good to see some people from either from Barcelona or from Tunis and Africa side as well. Good. And somebody is on the sharing is caring. That's not a island. There's nothing actually over there in the Pacific Ocean. Good. Moving on things. It's just an interesting to see how wide people we have on the audience. Moving on things. And now I can see here some background noise. Please unmute yourself for the call until we open up the maybe for the rest of the call for an open discussion, because we do have quite a significant amount of people actually participating again. There's our AKMS addresses. So if you want to really quickly get access on the Office 365 developer patterns and practices, you type AKMS/OfficeDevPNP and you will land to our GitHub repo. If you're not super familiar with the GitHub, you're actually landing to our wiki site, and in the wiki there is a links and information related on how to get started on using GitHub. Quite often what we've seen is that there's quite a few, well, classic SharePoint developers are not that familiar with the GitHub functionalities. They're more familiar with the TFS. And it does take a while, and indeed just take a while to learn the GitHub behavior, but it's not a that difficult thing. The other address what we have there is AKMS/OfficeDevPNP/Yammer, and you will land to our Office 365 Technical Network Yammer group, where you are more than free to ask any questions related on app model, any questions related on how would I do X and Y and Z using the app model, or any questions or feedback related on our samples in the patterns and practices guidance, or also suggestions. We're more than willing to get any suggestions using the Yammer group as well. Good. Moving on things, classical slides, what we do in every single month, and you can actually see the growth pattern, which is really good. So these are the key numbers right now. In the right after the individual main numbers, you can see the previous month. So right now we've been forked on 282 times in a GitHub, which is really significant. We are definitely the biggest repo in the underneath the Office Dev, which is really, really great achievement. Because we do have official SDKs there as well. We've already processed 329 merge pull requests. Essentially, those are community contributions. So you guys on the other side, you're more than welcome to just consume, but obviously we would like to have people to also contribute back. So if you have nice code examples, or if you find a bug within our code, there's two options. Go to the Yammer and say that there's a bug, or another option is that you actually fix the bug if you're familiar with the GitHub and submit that as a pull request or a suggestion how to improve some of the code. Really, really great thing to do. Good point from Bert, create an issue in the GitHub site. That's probably the most easiest thing to do. There's an issue list in the GitHub site. As long as it gets tracked there, we will follow up on those ones as well. We have 73 closed issues already, so it's not a huge amount, but it's things what we're fixing. We have more than 3,770 people, unique visitors during last 2 weeks. Last 2 weeks is missing from that line, but it's last 2 weeks, which is really, really significant. The previous time we went slightly less than the previous month, but that's because of the holidays, so there was a significant difference on the rate of the users accessing of the site. NuGet package has been downloaded 4,450 downloads. That's all together. That's the NuGet package for the Office 365 Patterns and Practices core component for the cloud or for the on-premises. We do have two different NuGet packages to choose from. The one is targeted for the 15 version, which is for on-prem, and the other one is for the cloud, which is the 16 version of the NuGet package. And they essentially what they do is that they bring extension methods. So for example, you can do a context.web.createContentType and just give a name of an ID for the content type, and you will have a content type with a one single line of a code. The whole point is to increase the productivity and have essentially one reusable component which the community can then use and suggest changes within their code as well. And we're going to talk about that one slightly later today on the slides as well. Yammer Group has already 1,739 members. It's probably slightly more than that because it seems to grow a few entries in a day. So if you do aka ms/officedevbnb, Yammer. And what's really cool is that based on our statistics in the Yammer network, in the Office 365 TechNet network, we are definitely the most active Yammer group in the whole network. We're not the biggest because actually the Office, the SharePoint IT Yammer group is slightly bigger, but we are no doubt the bigger, the most active Yammer group in that network, which you can pretty easily see also from the discussions. The discussions are really, really lively. The community helps each other. The whole point is that please do not send an email for me or Bert or any of the core team members at an entry to the Yammer group, and then we can actually share and learn from the questions, and you might get an answer slightly faster. My inbox is completely exploded, so there's no point asking questions from my side. Facebook base has 135 likes. It's growing slightly as well, which is a good thing. So if you go facebook.com/officedevbnb, that's our Facebook page. It's more a social experiment than nothing else. The Yammer group is the one which we're really interested in, and the GitHub behavior. Good, that's about the numbers. So let's move on the other stuff. So right now, did I go two slides? Yes, I did. So these are the persons who contributed last month as the key contributor, those persons who actually contributed back from the community. So we had Andrew Connell contributing from the article side, Eric Skark, I think, contributed from the core component side, Erwin Anhunen helps us already as part of the core team, which is really great. And Erwin is working heavily on the PowerShell, the BNB PowerShell side, so you can automate things against Office 365 really easily. Kevin Barron helped us actually to create a BNB training material, which there's a slide on the deck slightly later. And he also contributed some of the stuff what he did for the training material back on the BNB. Nandeep Nahan has been extremely active, and I know that these guys, because they're working pretty close to my location, but they are helping on finding whenever there's a gap, they're suggesting new changes on the core component, which is really great. Paola Piorsi, I think Paola is on the call as well, has contributed also heavily during last month. Patrick Pjorklund has been, and Paola, and both, Nandeep and all of the people have been pretty active for months and months and months. Robert Skutberg contributed as well. Radi Anatosi, there's two different, at least two different governance remote time jobs, and Radi is going to do the demo today if Radi can actually join the call on time. I'm just double checking, are you Radi there already? No, you're not. But he will be joining on the call slightly later. Tobias Simmergren contributed as a PNP article, and that will be eventually synchronized to the MSDN as well. So we do have two different repositories. We do have the code and code samples and some of the presentation, but then we do have the article site where you are able to actually see the original version of our MSDN guidance. Because one of the really cool things within the January, and we're actually missing a slide on that now that I remember, is the fact that we do have an official patterns and practices section right now in MSDN. And a lot of the guidance what we have in the Office 365 patterns and practices will be then synced automatically to the MSDN. And therefore we have a really nice channel of providing additional updates to the MSDN as well, which are still absolutely all the stuff what we have in MSDN or in the BNB are reviewed by the product group people, including, I'm from the product group as well, and we approve those contributions, and whenever the articles have been approved and reviewed, it might actually end up being as part of the MSDN, which is pretty, pretty cool. And then Ward Hammann and Thorsten Schucher from the last month as well. Really, really great stuff. We do have quite a significant amount of Microsoft people also contributing. We do have a core team people, core team members like Frank and Bert. Jeremy Fake is obviously highly involved on the BNP things as well. I am primarily is contributing. Risa is our technical writer, now working with the MSDN updates. Suman moved to the slightly different role, but he's still active on the team discussions. Ricky is a technical writer as well, and Steve Walker is actually my ex-team member. And we've been running this the thing in the BNP side for the product group perspective. Good, quite a few slides, so I'm actually keeping the pace so we get to the demos. So these are the new and update contributions. So we do have a new sample called user profile sync. It shows how to boost user profile properties from Azure AD to the SharePoint user profile store. This is a classic scenario where you can't actually influence which of the attributes from the Azure AD are being synced to the SharePoint Online user profile store. You can only influence that in on-premises. You can't influence that in Office 365. So there's clearly a gap, and this is a really good example of a workaround for that gap. So there's now a code example which is doing this automatically. There's the core.o patch, OData patch. Thank you, Roddy. There's a and good that you were able to make it. And there's a core.o data patch, which is showing how to perform patching of REST requests. I know that the AC, for example, has blogged about this one as well. This is coming from Ricky Kirkham, which is the technical writer who helped originally with Product Group to get the initial documentation up to date. New sample on core.web part on the app. Web page shows how to provision web parts in app web page using a module. So if you do have an app web, and if you work within the app website, that's a small HCPC example on that one. Provisioning.hybrid.simple, it's actually the name is slightly misleading. It is trying to be as simple as possible hybrid scenario. We did have a hybrid provisioning already previously in the BNP, but that was pretty complex to actually set up. It was an awesome work from Bert already more than a year ago, but it was so difficult to set up, so we wanted to do a simplified version. And what this one is doing is that you can run your provider-hosted application in the Microsoft Azure, but then you can actually provision sites to on-premises without any service, without any reverse proxies or anything like that. So it's actually demonstrating the functionalities like Azure Storage Queues, Web Jobs, and Service Bus Relay. Unfortunately, for that particular item, and it's absolutely my fault, I haven't had a time to do a proper documentation. I have a documentation and a video pending on that one, so that will be out pretty soon. New solution on governance content type enforced retention, that's from Ruddy, which is showing typical retention policy handling using the app model. We don't have a capability in the CSAM to actually take an advantage of the out-of-the-box information management services. But what we can do is actually store the configuration, what needs to be checked against our documents outside of the SharePoint. And then we can have a remote time a job, essentially a web job or a worker role or a console application or a Windows service, which is actually the one which is acting as the time a job in quotes. And scan through the individual sites and make sure that the documents are following the policies of the company. When I think of it, it's actually pretty much the same deal with out-of-the-box capability. So the out-of-the-box information management capability is working in a way that there's a time job which is reading those configurations for every single site collection, and then it checks the documents. Now, what we're doing here, or what Ruddy's example is doing, it is storing that information outside of the SharePoint and running the stuff outside of the SharePoint, but checking the status and items one by one within the SharePoint using the remote APIs. Really nice example of a ECM capability, enterprise content management capability, using the app model techniques. Governance site usage report, relatively simple but actually highly requested information. Quite often customers want to have a information related on all of my site collections within my tenant. What is the storage usage and some additional settings? And this is actually showing how to do that. It has the code and it's pretty much ready to go just by using F5, like all of our BNP examples. And again, good example of stuff what Ruddy did during last month. Where is my clicker? There it is. There's some updates on the solution. So there's obviously, we just don't want to grow all of our the amount of solutions. We already have a way too many solutions. Well, not precisely, but it's pretty difficult every now and then to find something specific. And that's where, for example, the dev.office.com will help. There's a filtering mechanism if you go to the dev.office.com to find out relevant information, for example, branding. At the same time, we don't want to, let's say, just crow adding whatever samples in the PNP. It's much better to actually also do updates on the existing solutions. There might be bugs which we're fixing, or we're updating the solution to be slightly more comprehensive. So it's still concentrating, for example, JavaScript injection, but then we're adding some additional scenario with that one. Or the OD4B Navlinks injection had a issue with the minimal download strategy, and it actually duplicated the navigation bars, and luckily Bert fixed that one for this release. Good example of a list of things, and obviously the final piece there is the PowerPoint PowerShell.commands. You really, if you're in the PowerShell and you want to operate against Office 365, that's Irvin's baby, but he's done a great job on actually doing those remote PowerShell commands against Office 365 to make things really, really easily scriptable, which is really interesting stuff. Good. On the PNP core side, and a few miscellaneous things. So this is a list of things what has been done on the PNP core. So there's a lot of improvements there. And do we have an updated number on the unit tests? No, we don't. And all of these details, good point from Bert. All of these details are always in our monthly release notes as well. One of the notes related on PNP core is that the next release, which will happen on the first Friday of the March, I can't remember what the date is, but that means that on that time we will remove all of the obsolete methods from the core component, and we will release the core component as a V1. What it means is that right now, if you have code and you compile the code within a Visual Studio and you see those kind of warnings what we have on the slides, which is saying, as an example, in this case, the set masturbates for site by name is an obsolete. You should be using set masturbates by name instead. You should be actually going through your code and double check that you don't have these things. The reason why we do this is that right now we have to do the cleaning, so we can actually start from the V1 clean setup and start growing from there. We used to accept pretty much any submissions to the core component for the embracing the possibility for the community to contribute. Now we need to start being slightly more strict on getting those contributions in, and make sure that the naming conventions and the method naming and all of that is followed, which we also need to get documented. Anyway, that's a really critical thing or interesting thing what's going to happen in March. Updates in the guidance repository. So there's three new articles related on the guidance. So if you go aka MS Office Dev PNP guidance, you will land to our guidance repository, which is automatically syncing this guidance to the MSDN. Well, some of that guidance is already synced to the MSDN automatically. Other stuff is coming soon as well. So here we have work done by Andrew Connells. I've done a few articles, and Tobias Simmergren converted one of his articles here as well, because that was a really, really great blog post. Thank you, Bert, for sharing the link. Clicking too many items at once. PNP core component moving to the V1. So this is something what I mentioned already. So we're moving into version 1.0 with the core component during March master merge. So this is the next time that we will do the release. It means that we will remove all deprecated methods from the core component. What it means is that there is a replacement method for that functionality, and we're just cleaning up our, let's say, the core component itself. We don't want to break, the reason why we haven't been cleaning up before is that we didn't want to break any of your development or any of your customizations until we clearly indicate that this will happen at some point. From a V1 version forward, we are committed on keeping, again, the the methods intact and have a version backward version compatibility on the core component. If there's going to be any significant changes, we will once again share that months and months beforehand, like with this particular change. But approach towards the V1 release, we really, really want to keep it simple and keep it small. We want to have some of the method has been way too complex, so we're moving in the class model. We've actually done it already. We use the core component on it only when it actually adds a value. There was some method submissions and core suggestions or pull requests where essentially the method was three lines, and that doesn't really add that much additional value. But then we do have functionalities in the core components which is actually hundreds of lines of code, like the capability of adding a new web part to a certain column and a row within a wiki page. It's a one-liner method. Thank you, Bert, for that. But it's replaces and increases the productivity of the developers enormously. And obviously unit testing improvements as well. One comment, Peter Klein, all documentation you refer is about calendar contacts and first. I'm foremost interested on Word as a part of Windows Store app. Is there any news on Word? All of the guidance what we actually mentioned in here is related on patterns and practices guidance, which we have in the GitHub. And this is not really nothing to do with Office 365 APIs guidance and documentation in MSDN. So this is slightly different. But again, if there's any specific questions related on, for example, Word APIs and so on, I would actually suggest to go to the Yammer group and add the question on that particular question, for example, to the Yammer group, and we'll find the right people to answer on that one. So we'll follow up on that one. PNP training. One of the interesting things which I haven't been even had a time to blog about, do a Twitter post about, is that we actually used, 2 weeks ago, we had a partner airlift for 3 days, and then we have an internal training for our services for 2 days. And for these ones, we used or created a new patterns and practices driven of thinking training, which is going to call partner airlift, or this is to transform SharePoint customizations to the app model. This is pretty much the same training what we're going to actually deliver, or the material from this training, with me and Jeremy Thake in the upcoming Evolution conference. But if you're highly interested on training material, if you want to do another delivery of this material, if you want to build your own app model transformation training offering, feel free to go to that akm.com/office-dev-bnp-training. And you can just download the packages, PowerPoints, and hands-on labs and demos from there. Well, to be honest, as a demos, we use stuff from the PNP guidance and start just redelivering the stuff. We don't just have fun with the material. And if you have good suggestions related on maybe possible bugs or maybe improvements to this material, we're more than willing. We definitely welcome any suggestions on the training material as well. It's called a transform your SharePoint customization to the app model, but the whole thinking is based on the PNP guidance and PNP approaches, which we show within the PNP samples. Have fun with it. There's tens and tens of new slides compared to our December delivery of the virtual Microsoft Academy training, me and Steve. So quite a lot of interesting stuff. We're looking also adding the instruction notes and additional details related on demos to this training package as well. But go to the Yammer crew, give us feedback, give us suggestions. Highly interested on what you think about this one. Less marketing, more real world. Hopefully that was a comment on PNP training, that it's more real world, not about shining new object things. And that's actually a good thing. That's a really good thing from Paul to mention. The whole PNP, the stuff what we do in the patterns and practices, a lot of this stuff is actually coming from our internal project called JDP. We don't have a slide on this one, and we don't actually want to tell too much information on that one. But that's a project where we work with 36 of our biggest customers who are in Office 365 dedicated platform, and we help them to transform their existing full-text code to the app model. So all of this stuff what you're seeing in BNP and all of the stuff which we used for the training as well, and all of this learnings in here are actually coming from these insights what we've been working with these dedicated customers. I started working with my first app model transformation guidance already actually 2 years ago. So there's a lot of history and a lot of interesting stuff on what we've been learning, and that's what we want to share through the BNP. And yes, this will be a baseline for the evolution training, evolution course. It will be a one-day session in evolution conference, so it's slightly different than a three-day session what we did for the partner airlift. Something related on the March release until we will before we can start the demos. And March release will have some really, really interesting stuff. So we will release actually first versions of our starter kits. We've been bending on these ones for quite a long time, but I know I'm pretty confident. I've seen the status where we are with these ones. And for example, there will be a starter kit related on remote time job implementations with the multi-threading support. So you're able to actually process multiple site collections at once. For example, if you need to do check individual documents in the or content type definitions in the individual documents in site collections, you're able to do multi-threading across multiple site collections and operate that more efficiently. I think our testing was showing that we can increase with multi-threading, we can increase the process by 400% of the performance. And that's really, really neat framework because it gives you all the insights on how can you can target individual site collections or group of site corrections and so on. So that's really, really great stuff. The provisioning engine, the V1, will be also released as part of the March release. We're just locking down the plans during this week. There will be a core component V1.0. We've been in 0.5 and random numbers beforehand. But now we are finally essentially on the status that we're able to get the V1 out. We will remove the deprecated methods, cleaning, unit test coverage. And also we're looking into having time to write more articles, more documentation, because that's what people actually want to have. They want to have understand the reasoning and the thinking what we have in the patterns and practices guidance, which is slightly different what you actually see from MSDN. I think we are more practical. And we skip all the marketing gimmicks, which is a something which seems to land really well on the customers as well. Good, a lot of talking. So let's move on the demos. And what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna quickly start, and I'm gonna do the demo related on the hybrid. And I'm going to show how it actually works and pretty much walk through the process. So what it is that I'm just showing a demo related on site provisioning from Windows Azure to on-premises using web jobs, storage queues, and service bus relay. It's called Hybrid Simple, but it's still not super, super simple. And then after that, Bert is going to do core.o data patch. Or actually, let's do Ruddy first, if you Ruddy are available for if you're able to show the implementation. Excellent. So let's do Ruddy first and then Bert with a REST call patching if we have time. Before I actually start with the hybrid provisioning, I just created quickly a slide, and that's the reason why there's a small bug on the slide. The number 6 shouldn't be visible. I didn't test this one. I just quickly created a slide just before we started this call to show what this one is doing. This will be absolutely documented. It will be a blog post. It will be an article in PNPM, but just running out of time. But what we have here with the store with the simple hybrid is that it's a classic provider-hosted application where a person can go and request. Where a person can go, thank you for the unit testing comment on PowerPoint. A person can go to a provider-hosted application as a self-service site collection creation tool. Person goes there and selects what kind of the template, and then the person can select is it a cloud or on-premises. So do I want to create the site collection to the on-premises or to the cloud? The whole thing is running in Microsoft Azure. We take advantage of the storage queue. The reason why we want to do that is that you don't actually want to have a GIF animation shown for the end users until the site collection is created, which is pretty much actually the behavior how SharePoint behaves if you create a new site collection using Central Admin. But that's really not an end user friendly way of doing stuff. So what we want to do is essentially process the request, And then say for the end users or the requester that, oh, your request has been recorded. I will send you an email whenever the request is ready to go forward. And on that moment, we actually add the request to the storage queue. And now I can see some background noise. Please unmute yourself for a while still. There we go. So we are adding an item to the storage queue. And then in the storage queue, this is seriously, it's a one attribute or two lines of code to make sure that your web job, which is continuously running in the Microsoft Azure, will get fired. So the linking between the Azure storage queue and the web job is actually two lines of code, or one attribute in a method call, which is really interesting. But what will happen is that you add that request in the storage queue. You, as an end user, you're free to go until you get an email that the site collection is created. But on the background, we will have the web job, which is essentially a remote timer job, executed or started, and that is getting that request from the storage queue. In that request, it is essentially having information. Should I create a site collection to the Office 365 using the normal method, using the tenant APIs and create a new site collection, and then apply the branding on top of it? Or should we actually create a site collection to the on-premises? And what we need to do with on-premises is that we need to just have an implementation of a service bus relay. And what that one means is that without any reverse proxies, without any internet channels or ports being open, we're able to have a client in our company network, which is essentially waiting for commands from the cloud. The reason why it's actually working is that that client or service is connected to the Microsoft Azure with a two-dimensional or two-directional channel. And whenever there's a item added to the service bus relay message, that service is catching that, oh, I have a new task to do, and then that is actually starting the creation in the on-premises. So really, really simplistic possible way. But I'm going to do the documentation on this one, and I'm going to explain the needed configuration. This is pretty much can be configured just by updating web config a few times. And I'm going to actually show you, well, the good question from Ruddy related on WSP templates or per season. So we always use per season. We do recommend people to move away from WSP packages, and we use CSAM for remote provisioning. So we create an out-of-the-box theme site, but then we apply the needed branding, configurations, content types, and all of that using client-side object model. And that's where the pretty soon released remote provisioning framework will help, so that not everybody has to start from scratch and writing their tooling on this particular thing. If you are interested on why you shouldn't be using WSP packages, that's why you want to go to the Virtual Academy training, the Microsoft Virtual Academy, related on transforming for your customization from to the app model. And that's where we explain, let's say, the challenge with the WSP packages and feature framework. It's a really long story, and I'm happy to schedule a separate time on it. Good. I'm gonna quickly do. Damn it, the time flies when you're having fun. Gonna quickly share my screen, and I'm gonna take three people confirming that you're able to see my screen. I'm sharing my. You should be seeing Visual Studio, and then I want to make sure that I have a connectivity to my on-premises as well. And I can see that somebody is seeing what I'm sharing. Can somebody confirm? Good. Good. So that's already a good sign. So this is our provisioning hybrid symbol. As said, it's not as that simple, and right now the README is not actually, the documentation is really bad. What will happen within the, from a process perspective, this is a typical SharePoint provider hosted application. That's the app project, and that's the provider hosted project. From our provider hosted application, we will add an item to the storage queue. The storage queue will actually fire a web job. And the web job, if that request is for the on-premises, that web job will actually then fire a service bus, which will essentially execute the on-premises service, which is running in the on-premises. So I'm going to show this one in practice. I'm going to first show you the functionality. If I can actually get my on-prem connectivity to work, it should be fine. Configuring, estimating connection quality. And there it is, and actually it got opened on another screen, and I'm gonna track and drop that one in. Good, so there's my own on-premises. This is a server which is running in the actually Helsinki, Microsoft Helsinki data center. And what I have here, and you will, as said, you will get the document full documentation slightly later, but this is a service bus service, which is essentially running within my on-premises, waiting for commands in the Microsoft Azure. And it can be configured, or it has been configured to have an endpoint in the web app config. It's looking for stuff from my service bus with a certain secret. You don't actually see the full secret, so this is pretty safe. But what it actually does also is that without any app model configuration in the on-premises, it is using directly the CSAM. Not with an app model, not with an app only, not with anything related on or off. It's just using the one service account to connect to the on-premises SharePoint farm to create a new site collection. And that's, it's using the CSAM APIs, APIs what we have for on-premises, which was improved to support the site collection creation as well. So we're going to quickly run through the process. I have already right now, I'm going to quickly show that one as well. And I will record a proper video on this one, but today we don't have too much time. I have one web job actually running in my Azure, which is called the VESA-J hybrid web job. And that one is set to be running continuously. If I'm going to zoom there. So it's running continuously, which means that it's actually waiting for something to happen, and in this case it has been looped into the storage queue. So whenever we will add an item to the storage queue, it will actually fire this web job, which is something what I also showed in my previous blog post related on how to do OneDrive for Business configuration using the web job and storage queues. So now if we quickly do an F5 here. Well, first of all, there's also one nice tested project. I'm just showing you how these things are. It's called Contoso Hybrid Simple Console Send Message. And this one is something which can be used for testing that the connectivity to the on-premises is working. And there's my secret. I'm going to actually change that one after the recording, so that's absolutely fine. But what I can do with this one is that I can execute and do a debug and start an instance. And I should have a breakpoint here waiting. I can test that my service bus configuration is actually working properly. So that's my service bus. I'm going to slightly close the stuff so you're able to see. There's my server backend in the on-premises. I'm running my stuff from my own local laptop. So now if we actually go here, let's try to get everything visible at once. I'm able to test that my service bus configuration, which has two lines in the web config, because everything has been highly simplified. I'm able to send a message from my on-premises, from my laptop, and it should actually land on my on-premises right about, dun, 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 dun. If everything works, there we go. At this point, my on-premises fellow said, got a message, test message sent at 1843 AS18, and it actually got the message 20 or 15 seconds later. So it took a 15 seconds to go through the service bus. And then the following step, for this tester, it would be that it's testing the creation of the site collection. But I don't want to actually do that from there. I'm going to do it differently. So what I'm doing is that I'm going to do an F5. I'm going to show you the UI. And I'm going to use the UI to fire that at an item to the storage queue. And then in the storage queue, it's going to execute the web job. And in the web job, it's going to check that, oh, is this for on-premises? It's for on-premises. It's going to actually use then the service bus relay to connect or execute the creation of a site collection in on-premises using that Azure service. So I'm moving that again there. I'm signing into my Office 365. My application has been already trusted. Well, the application itself doesn't actually. Oh, it doesn't. Okay, it really doesn't matter. Let's trust it. So let's add that one application in. The UI is extremely simple. And that's for a purpose, so that this is not concentrating on a fancy UI with the people picker and all of that. You could actually do that as well with the patterns and practices guidance. But let's try to actually see and make sure that this is working properly. So now what I'm doing is that I'm running essentially the provider hosted application. In my particular case, I'm still using my IIS Express just as well. This would be coming from the Microsoft Azure. And end users can come here and say, Bert's new site collection. They can select the template, they can do collaboration, or let's do collaboration site, contours of collaboration site, and I'm going to say site target in on premises. And what will happen is that this is adding an item to the storage queue. The storage queue will fire the web job right now. For the end user, it is saying your request has been recorded, we're going to send you an email to that address whenever the site collection creation is completed. But now after a certain moment of waiting, on the right side within the console, we should see that the Azure storage queue, the web job, is actually executing the site collection request to the on-premises. There we go. And now I can actually zoom there, and it's saying, got a request to process site with the title of Bert's new site collection. And with the template of Contoso collaboration at 8:36:06. That does take a while to actually create the site collection. So the reason, so I can actually quickly go and show you what it's actually creating. And yes, Bert, you're getting your own site collection in my tenant. Sorry, in my on-premises platform. Ah, damn, I can't copy that, the name from there. Let's actually go here. Just quickly showing what the system is, what is it actually doing. View all site collections. Still creating that. I'm going to actually copy that one. Let's copy a random one there. This one is a really, really, really simple fellow. So it's creating site collections with the random GUID. But what it's actually doing is that it's applying a custom branding using the CSAM, using the CSAM operations as well. So it's not taking advantage of SP packages. And now we essentially, after a while, whenever the process is executing, this is previously created site collection. We're getting the Bert's new site collection created to the on-premises. And again, no app model installed in on-premises, no low trust, high trust as server to server, and so on. Good, we're running out of time. I can't run into the code. I will do a video recording on the code, and you can already download the example. There will be details coming up. So let's switch to Ruddy. Ruddy, ready to go?
Yep. Hey guys, do you hear me okay?
Yes, we can, actually. Really good. Awesome. Really well. Just awesome steal stuff. The present. I need to upgrade you as a presenter, right?
I am, I think.
Okay. Sure. Somebody did it already then. Good. Yeah. Just steal the presentation.
All right.
Now you're actually requesting a control.
Sorry, maybe.
I'll do that. Stop presenting.
Yeah.
Don't touch my farm, Ruddy.
You see my screen?
No, not yet.
Okay. Bert, okay. Is it?
Bert is cutting.
Right. So, hey guys, just quickly go over the two solutions. I don't know how much time I have, so Vessi, if I'm going off track, you can. Let me know. I basically have two things to show. One is content type retention. We had a need at a client where we want specific content types within a site to be to have retention enforced. You can do it through the interface, but if you have site ownership permission, you can take off that retention. So our client really wanted to enforce absolutely retention on content types. So the way we did the solution is we built a console application that uses a client-side object model to basically filter out content types in different sites. So you configure it by plugging in the content type ID and giving it a value of days. You can be specific or as abstract as possible in terms of the content types. So what this application does is it basically goes over your configured site collections. So you might have either a list of fixed ones in your web config, or you might want to get all the site collections and crawl them anyway. But the code, the first thing that it does, as most of the console applications that we build for our clients, is we use an app-only access token because we need it to access across multiple site collections. So that's one of the important points here. And we basically start crawling the site collections located in the web config. We process them recursively, so we do a recursive method. And you'll notice we use the exponential retry methods that were in the guidelines. And we process the libraries, so we are doing actual content crawling here, and that's why we're using the methods that basically implement throttling carefully, or they take into consideration the potential throttling capability. So we crawl this content, we get all the content types, we do a match by the content type IDs, and if we do have a potential map on the content type, we then do a query on the item. So be careful if you have too many items here. And at the end of the cycle, we basically do some actions. And your actions could be to delete the particular list item based on that content type, or maybe start a workflow against them to do some kind of implementation. But that was the key element for our scenario. So we did this content crawling capability in order to enforce this. It's a bit tricky. You really need to be careful with this solution, and you need to be concerned about how much content it will be crawling, because if you have thousands and thousands of items, this might actually be a burden. You might want to actually slow it down furthermore if you further need to. But this one solves the problem of making sure absolutely every content type in the system has retention enforced over the site collections that you need to do. And in my particular case, our client has scenarios where end users would turn this off if they don't want it. So a bit of a good way to do this, obviously it's an Office 365 capability. On-premise, you might have alternative ways to enforce it. Now, as with as I said at the start, we do this as a console application. This is quite interesting the way we register this. It's described in the article, but we generate a client ID and a secret from the tenant using the appreg new URL. Once we register that, and you'll notice I use localhost here because there is no user context here. The user will never touch the console application, so I just use localhost to make this form submit correctly, and you can get my secret. If someone actually has time to test my client's secret on my test tenant, then they should probably have the right to use it and deserve it. I have no problem with that. But anyway, next step is to give our client ID appropriate permissions. In our case, I've given a tenant permission, but you might want to consider to limit that if your case has that. We trust the app, and then I'd store the client ID and the secret in the app config file, and that's how this application basically runs. Just to quickly ask if there's any questions on this, and I'll show my next solution. I'm rushing.
Yeah, sorry, Roddy, for not giving you enough time for this one.
Yeah, I can't even run this because I haven't even had the time to set up network on my VM, but crystal clear. Yeah, you'd want to do this. So my comments here is, and we've implemented this, so my comments are, be careful with network capacity, be careful with growth of what you are content crawling, and I call it content crawling because this thing running every night will go through all the items that you specify. So definitely make use of throttling. There's a lot of unclear elements onto when you'll get throttled and how you'll get throttled. But we definitely need to implement these solutions with that. So my next demo is the user profile sync app. Vesa mentioned it earlier. The key here is that in SharePoint Online, you cannot change the fields that the user profile sync tool pulls from Active Directory and puts into your user profiles. And in our case, we needed the country in the user profile section. So we can either do a sync solution that is custom, or we could read from Azure Active Directory in real time when we need that data. And the measurements that we put in place, it's a bit too slow for us. So we wanted them in the user profiles where your client-side object model access time is much shorter and way faster than pulling it from Azure AD. So this solution first reads what's called the sync configuration. And the sync configuration is really just, let me just remember where I put it. There's a property configuration file XML. This really just shows the Azure Active Directory attribute name that you want to read and the user profile attribute name in SharePoint user profiles, and this is just a test field. And we have some behavior here on what actually happens if it's blank or you want to override or you want to do multi-fields. So the application first gets the configuration. You can add more properties there. The next part of code is quite interesting, getting users from Active Directory or from Azure AD. You will notice here we use the new Graph API. It's version 2.0, so it's using the latest NuGet packages. And the code there is it's using the task parallel library very, very well with the await keyword. So you'll see quite of these page collection elements when you use this library. But what this line of code does is just gets the users from Azure Active Directory in a page collection. So if you use Fiddly, you'll actually see how it's pulling them in a nice, efficient way, and it's calling your Active Directory instance behind Office 365. Now, the way it's authenticating to that is where it gets really interesting. We are using what I'm doing here, and it's well explained in the article, is I'm registering the SharePoint app or the client ID of the SharePoint app in Azure Active Directory, and I'm giving it permission to read the directory. You'll actually see this in the README file on the actual solution, or you'll see it on my last blog post, and it's the quickest way I can show you this, but we're using a few lines of PowerShell to give directory reader permission to our SharePoint app in Azure Active Directory that's behind the Office 365 tenant. So this is pretty cool stuff. You can check it out on my blog, and it's just sharepoint.bg/Rati. It's also in the article in Patterns and Practices. You can find how that works technically. So just to repeat those steps, we register the app in SharePoint with appreg new. We give it permissions in SharePoint, and then we give it permissions to read Azure Active Directory. And then you can perform these bits of code in your SharePoint app. So you can follow the code here. Once you get a list of users, it's then just a matter of sending it to a method that will iterate through all users, read the field that we need. In my case, it's the country field. And then we need to save to SharePoint user profiles. This is where it gets a little bit more messier. I personally don't like the idea of putting the username and password in the web config, but the SharePoint user profiles CSOM APIs do not work with app-only context tokens, and therefore I have to use a tenant username and password in my web config to achieve this. And there has been discussions over the Yammer patterns and practices thing, and there is some kind of a problem, and I think Vesa, you took the ownership to follow that through and see if there is any proper resolution to this. If there is a way, I would love to get rid of this in our sample and use the proper CSOM libraries, but here we're doing basically the people manager object using SharePoint online credentials, and this is the class that doesn't support app only context tokens. Just see if someone's bugging me. Best store, yeah, of course. You would definitely want to store those usernames and passwords encrypted just as a next layer of security. But here we read, we iterate through each user, we get their property from basically from Azure Active Directory, and then we go about to set it in SharePoint user profiles. There's APIs for multi-value and single value because you can do both. Basically, I've only done here if write if blank, and if no, and you can do different logic if it's the same or different basically on writing. So this sorts the problem of how do you extend custom fields and user profiles and read from Azure Active Directory, which is a real case scenario that we had to do in our clients, which is basically a multi-country client. So we need to distinguish the user's country in real time as they open the page. And this is basically our solution. Everything else here in the code is just pure stuff. One interesting thing that you might know with the Azure client library, first, the object is called Active Directory Client rather than Graph Connection or Graph Client, as the beta versions where we're doing this. And in one case, if you have the tenant ID, we are skipping this really cool way to skip the extra call to get the tenant ID basically from the SharePoint admin URL realm. And it's another cool way to not have this in the web config and just basically stick in the tenant ID. When we're doing this for one client, it makes sense. When you're doing it for something else, then you might want to get this in. But this just makes one more call from the solution. Obviously, it's authenticating once, but this is something cool. I think I'm running out of time, so unless there's any questions, Vesa, back to you. Thank you for your time.
And yes, I think what we need to do, I know that people have other meetings jointly starting as well. And sorry, this seems to be a theme, but we don't want to crowd this too big, the sessions. But if there's any questions for Ruddy or me or Bert or any of the teams, please go to that Yammer group. Ruddy is there as well to definitely, and I know that Ruddy is more than willing to explain those things in the Yammer as well. So akams.officedev@bnbyammer, and you will land to our Yammer group, and we are there to wait for your questions, and we will get your stuff answered. So sorry for running out of slightly on time and not being able to do Q&A properly today, but thanks for everybody on joining. It's great to see the interest and great to see the questions, great to see the people actually being excited on what are we actually sharing. And if you have your own ideas, own things, please use the Yammer, please use the GitHub. We are more than willing to take additional contributions, written contributions and code contributions in the PNP. Sharing is caring, like Bert is putting. So thank you, everybody. We're closing in the call. I'm gonna actually just stop the presentation or move to the slides. I'm gonna go mute. If there's any specific questions, if you need to have an answer right now, we'll be hanging here for few minutes, but we're gonna close up the call pretty much right now. Thank you, everybody, for joining.